All right, so welcome to Future Considerations. This is Eleni.
This is Mike.
And
the regular season is over as of right now as we're recording this. We are recording this on a Monday before the playoffs. I think we should all go over what we think our biggest surprise of the season is. I would say the Riveters not being like a total powerhouse is probably still the thing that, like, I just remember seeing them on paper at the beginning of the year and really thinking it was going to be like Lake Placid. And I was surprised that they've maybe struggled more than I anticipated that they would. Not that it really matters, because the way that playoffs are set up, like, it's a single game elimination. So all they really have to do is win one game against Minnesota. But, I think that was the biggest surprise to me, was not seeing them dominate the way that I sort of expected them to.
That's a good one. I don't really want to single any individual players out. Like, in terms of some players who had pretty low scoring seasons, there were a couple big names who didn't put up a lot of points, and that was surprising to me. But I think the biggest surprise to me, because I picked them to be finishing first before the season began, it has to be the Boston Pride going 10-5-5, finishing in third. Not as great as the sum of their parts, which is just, it hurts my brain. And the other thing that really hurts my brain is they finished the season with a 5.6% power play. I don't understand. I don't understand. The team is way too good to be 5.6 on the power play. But we've seen other teams with a lot of talent not have a good power play. Team USA, for example. Anyway, Dan, what was your big surprise from the season?
I was leaning a little bit towards the Boston thing, like you. I look at their roster and the scoring leaders, and I'm baffled, because there's far too many good players there, and the point total is really low. But as I believe I said on a previous episode, I'm going to eat crow, and you know, I picked Toronto to finish last. So obviously I was surprised by Elaine Chuli almost running the table the whole season. And the other, I guess, little kind of surprise for me was Mariah Fujimagari finishing with 4 or 5 wins this season. And two shutouts the last two appearances. I think coming into the season, I thought maybe she would get one game. Maybe two, depending on, you know, if Connecticut wanted to rest Abby Ives. And the last couple of weekends we saw where Colt Knorr had no problem splitting the weekend between his two goaltenders. And obviously a bunch of them were after Abby had won a game, because she didn't lose. They were on a 12-game winning streak, and she just lost in overtime on Saturday. So that was the other, you know, if we want to go a little individual, that was something that I was really surprised to see and happy to see too, because Fuji's a great person and a great ambassador for the game and for the league.
You can tell she has a great relationship with Abby too, just from like the post-game sellies, and it makes me so happy. I just love goalie love. I love when they are best friends and they support each other and there's no beef, and I don't know. I just think it's sweet. It makes me happy.
Goalie hugs are awesome.
It's really hard to hug people in that gear, actually. It's a triumph every time they really make it work. I'm going to just be honest with you. It's really difficult. There's a lot of padding involved. So the Whale, speaking of the Whale, are the regular season champions for the first time ever.
In ever, yeah.
Yep. I realize the league is not like super old, but that's still really impressive considering they're one of the founding four. And also, especially considering how good their initial season was, which I remember they were pretty impressive.
They were a scary team that first year. Yeah,
it was like Molly Engstrom, Jess Koizumi, Kelly Stack.
Fratty was there.
Yeah. Fratty.
Fratty was there. Sam Faber. It was. They Leonoff. Were scary.
Yeah, that was a good team.
Okay. That was a scary team. But this Whale team is significantly scarier to me. I just think the league is deeper and like the parity is closer, and they are so scary, and they deserve this regular season championship. They just are so, I don't know. It really came down to the wire with them in Toronto, and the way they played Toronto this weekend, I think, you know, cemented to me that I was not surprised to see them come out on top, I guess.
It's an interesting thing when you have a league where you just have 6 teams or 5 teams or 4 teams, and, you know, you want parity, right? And parity is so important. And for a couple of years there, the Whale were the lovable underdogs. And I feel like what made them so damn good this year is they kept playing like they're underdogs, but now they had all this skill. Like, they still grinded it out, like, leaned on people, made people miserable when they played them. Like, the Kaylee Hutchison line was just, like, watching that line play, you could tell that line pissed off everyone it played against. And then when that line wasn't pissing you off that way, you had to play Kennedy Marchman's line. And Kennedy Marchman had the puck all the time. But I know a lot of diehard Whale fans who were waiting for a season like this, and you earned it. You deserved it. So I'm super happy for all of them. Very happy for a lot of players who've been around a long time. The Casey Andersons, the Hannah Beatties, the Shannon Turners, of course, of the world, who, and even Janine Weber, who's now been in that Whale team for a while now. And, you know, she, some folks forget she wasn't there for when the Ribs won their Isabel Cup. So this is a big opportunity for Janine Weber as well, who's been the first ever player to sign in the NWHL, now PHF, but a very, very great season for a team that, like, I think I tweeted about it, they smashed or set like every franchise record they had along the way. And you look at that team, you're like, oh yeah. And all their best players are still super young and can be here for a long time. And that's,
and they're just having the best time. Like, yeah, every picture, so every video you see of them, the vibes are just off the charts. As the resident vibes expert on this podcast, I must say, the vibes are just impeccable.
Immaculate. Immaculate vibes.
Yeah, it's, you know, kudos to the Whale. I'm glad I picked the right game to go to this weekend. I went to the Saturday game, and it was 5-4, and I'm glad I didn't drive the 2 hours to see a 5-0 game. And Saturday's game, like, it had, like, everything. Like, I feel like Stefan from SNL, like, this game had everything. Like, you had really nice skill plays. You had, like, that grimy, grinded out, you know, sword fights in front of the net and battles. Some great saves by both goalies, controversy, a goal review.
That review, I don't know about that goal still, but
I watched the replay when I came home. That's how good that game I thought was. Like, I got home and I watched the end of the Boston game, and then I immediately put that game back on, and because I wanted to watch it kind of from a different perspective. But and Colton Orr after the game, like, he says, you know, he was kind of like smiling, and I'm thinking in my head, like, dude, you just lost a game. Like, I, you know, the season's pretty much on the line here. Like, not on the line, but, you know, first place anyway. And I'm like, this guy's in a pretty good mood. Like, I'd be pretty chapped probably still 20 minutes after the game. And then you see the way they played on Sunday, and it kind of, I understand why he was a little at ease. And something Emma Vlasic said, I didn't get to actually talk to her, but something she said on the broadcast was, on Sunday, was, you know, we put up 4 on Chuli, and we lost, but that's still a feather in our cap. And you saw it the next day. Now, the next day it was a nothing game, right, until the start of the second period.
It opened up.
And then the onslaught, like, started to come, and, you know, they just come at you, and – pun intended, they come at you in waves. And, you know, they have these big players like Girard and Marchment and Wolfeiler, and they work you down. And Girard, for one, like, I've seen her play in person 4 or 5 times now. She's really big, but she's so skilled, and really quick foot speed. Like, I saw her outrace. Toronto has a lot of really smaller, kind of faster, short step, kind of choppy chop skate, and this, you know, Taylor Girard was just blowing by them from one zone to the other, winning loose puck battles, canceling out icings, and then you see, you know, the passing, that the chemistry that she has with Marchment and Wolfeiler, and the season didn't start that way. That line did not start together. What a genius move, and it's allowed them to have some real balance throughout that lineup. That Janine Weber with Vlasic and Conway is a handful. Conway is another player who is deceptively fast, and really quick hands, and we saw that really on display this weekend. And then when I feel like we've talked about this on another podcast, then you have the Hutchison, you know, line where they, and Fluke, and Sam Moskevich was up with them this weekend, and they're just, like, the crap out of you. Like, So they are a load, and if somebody can knock them out, they're going to have to really be at the top of their game, I think.
I think they're going to have to be good and lucky to knock the Whale out.
And I'll say the only question mark for me still is the goaltending. I know, they've had a great season. They have a great record, but I wonder if Abby Ives is, I wonder if the other teams see her as invincible. I feel like they don't. And those are the, if you find a team that maybe gets a couple past her early, I wonder how the momentum of that would be able to, carry that team forward.
Yeah.
They have a bye. So, both Connecticut and Toronto get a bye. So the teams that will play on Friday are the Riveters will play Minnesota, presumably without Lev, which is something that they may have to handle. And the Buttes and the Pride will play again. I think that's going to be really interesting. I think, honestly, both of those matchups, to me, it's a total coin flip at this point. Even if Lev doesn't play, the kid they signed out of Wisconsin absolutely could steal. If it's just one game, if it's a 3-game series, if it's a 5-game series, this is a different conversation. It's one game. Brianna Blessy could absolutely steal a game from them if she needed to. So
she's been great, I was saying.
And she's just having the best time. Every single angle of her, every shot that almost goes in, it cuts to her and she's like smiling her entire face off. It's amazing. Yeah. To me, it's like the most Minnesota thing imaginable. I just haven't spent a lot of time in Minnesota, but I love it. And I love that I cannot even make a serious prediction for either of the first games that will be played on Friday. But that's the schedule. I think the Pride Buttes is the 4 p.m. game, right?
Yep.
And then Minnesota will play the Riveters.
7:30.
I just want to add really quick, like, I think some people might think, like, saying, oh, it's a coin flip, it's a toss-up between the Pride and the Buttes might be because the Pride haven't maybe lived up to expectations. But I think that says so much more about where the Buttes are than where the Prides are. Where the Pride are, because, like, I'm convinced if this was a 28-game season, the Buttes would continue to get better. Like, if this season didn't stop at 20 games, we'd see the Buttes continue to develop as a team, develop chemistry, really get the impact of what players like Kepler and Trevino can bring into the mix. Like, the Buttes are not a joke. Like, the Buttes can really play. The fact that they beat Boston twice in overtime to wrap up the season and now they play them again, they know they can beat Boston. They just did it twice.
It was back-to-back wins.
Yeah, you can't say it's a fluke, not when it happens twice.
And she also doesn't play for either of those teams, so there's that.
So it definitely can't be a fluke, yes. Very good, Lenny. I was waiting for Michelle to make a disgusted face. That didn't come.
She wasn't even listening. She's going to hear it back when she's editing, and she's going to be like, God damn it, Lenny.
But no, I think it speaks volumes about where the Buttes are now and how far they've come. And when they're fully healthy, like, something that not a lot of folks have talked about is when Taylor Kersey got back in the lineup, she finished the season like almost a point per game player.
That's wild. That's just insane.
She missed so much time. I think she missed 7 games, Dan, 7 or 8 games, and still picked up a bunch of points. And like, oh yeah, they were missing their best winger for a lot of the season.
One of her captains.
Yeah, like a foundational piece of that team was out of the lineup. So, like, of course they look better when she's there. But it's really fun. I love the matchup of, we're almost certainly going to see Bert versus CJ. It's a great, great goalie matchup. And, Blessy and it's got to be Waleko. I talked to Ivo Mocek after the Rivs last game, and Ivo said, like, they're going with Brooke Waleko. And that's not a surprise. It's not anything against Sonia Shelley, but Waleko, Dan and I have talked about it like throughout the season. The numbers are better. And then when you look at her, she just seems a little more on top of her crease, fewer dangerous rebounds, things like that. But the Rivs know they have 2 good goalies, and the Whitecaps are in a position where who knows what happens with Lev? Big question mark. If they don't have Lev, they're not, up a certain creek without a paddle. Like, they have someone they know can stop pucks. So they have that going for them.
I think if Lev does come back, she's got to do like an Undertaker style.
Yes, dry ice.
They've got to roll her in a fake coffin and the smoke, and then she can rip the door open and sit up. And you know she'd be down for it because of the McLevman history. So I'm just saying, if she comes back in time for the playoffs, we need as much theatrics as possible.
She snaps her crutches over her goalie pad, throws them into the crowd. That's what I want.
I look at that Rivers Whitecaps game, and I don't know what's going to happen. I feel like it could be 1-0, or it could be 6-5. And obviously, without Lev, I think it more leans towards like the 6-5 kind of realm of possibility. And I think Minnesota would be comfortable that way. I think they might be a little more comfortable that way than a 1-0 game with an inexperienced goalie behind them, or they need a one goal to tie up a 1-0 game. I wonder where they're at mentally. The last two games, Mike and I saw them play in person. Taylor Turnquist was playing center. They've had different lines literally almost every game. So I'll be interesting to see how they show up. I know obviously Megan Pizon and a few of the other players, and the vibe I get is they just, you know, just we just have to win three games. Whatever happened before has happened, and we just have to win three games now, and we'll be champions. The other game I feel like is going to be a 2-1, 3-2 game at most. It's probably not going to be decided until third period. I wonder if Boston playing possum this weekend. Obviously, they want to work on their power play. They changed goalies in the middle of the first game. Like, to me, like, you know, you everything was set, right? They knew they were playing Buffalo. You want to get in a good headspace and all that. But at the end of the day, were they giving it, you know, their best effort? I'm not saying that they weren't and nobody was trying or anything like that. Please, nobody insinuate or take it that way. But if you know in your mind, like, okay, like, we have two games against this team and we're playing them again in 5 days, would we like to beat them down? Yeah, but if it doesn't happen, like, I don't know. I feel like they're a pretty confident group, and Lionesses are always very dangerous when they're cornered. So I find it really hard to pick against them in that game, for sure.
Spoken like a man who's been on many safaris.
Are there a lot of corners in the Serengeti, Dan? I was trying to, like, where do we come from?
Rocks? I think if anything, like, you're trying to learn as much as you can about the Buttes in those two games, right? Like, you obviously want to win them, but there was a lot of, like, feeling each other out. And also, this, like, random new rivalry specifically between Dempsey and Vinkel is so good. Like, I need it. A 10-part reality TV miniseries. Like, I've just never seen Dempsey get that aggravated ever in my life. But I refuse to bet on either of them, because I feel like one thing could be different and they go in and it's like a totally different game than you imagined it was going to be 20 minutes before. But it'll be exciting for sure. Speaking of the Buttes did a really cool thing this year where they did end of the season awards. I think they did MVP. They did a Row the Boat award.
They did Rookie of the Year. They did Unsung Hero. And then the Deborah A. Crisanti Memorial Award. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Yep. Which was a diehard Buttes fan who unfortunately passed away before her time. It's given in recognition, I believe, Dan, is this right? Like, community relations, person who gives back the most to Buffalo, which, as you can imagine, like, I'm getting a frog in my throat just describing what that award is, like, what that would mean to receive to the players in that locker room. You see this, and like, you see, I don't think it's a well-kept secret that we're all big fans of Nate Oliver. I'm a buddy of Nate's. Dan's a buddy. You know, before he was running a hockey team, he was one of us. He was a writer. And seeing the little, like, to some folks, this might be a little thing, but these are the little things that matter. Like, these little things that build team history, that get players extra invested, build that connection between fans. Like, all this stuff to me is just like, it's, every team should do it. And every team should be following the Nate's lead here and the Butte's lead, because this is wonderful. This stuff matters. At the end of the year, you know, last home game, what have you, handing out these awards to your team, to the fans who show up, who have season tickets, getting to see this, like, one of my, like, all these awards are great, but I love Cassidy McPherson getting the unsung hero. Because, like, I've been a big fan of her game since she's been in the league, and she's always that center who just works so hard, works harder in the defensive zone than in the offensive zone, and her wingers always do well, and you're like, oh, there might be something to this Cassidy McPherson. And there is. She's a really great player. So it was great seeing her get that recognition. Team Rookie of the Year was Kennedy Ganzer, and Team MVP, the surprise of no one, was Carly Jackson. So
I think Row the Boat was Katie Flagg, and yeah. The Deb Award went to Amy.
Amy Buddy.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Off the top of awesome. My head.
And I love the Row the Boat, like, you know, the consummate teammate and stuff like that. Katie Flagg, who, you know, didn't get to play any minutes this season, but obviously is a big part of that team. It's something we end up talking about a lot. It might be because Eleni's here. This, like, how important, like, the third goalie is and how teams should do more. Like, I loved with the Whales signed Jessica Strack after everything. She was like, yes, can we have more of those nice things for these, for goalies who might not see ice time in games or might only be in there on an emergency basis? Like, that stuff is huge. And those players always go the extra mile on every team. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So players like that getting recognition to me is awesome. Every team should do it.
Yeah, with Katie Flagg, if I'm not mistaken, I think I was told, you know, before the season started that the plan was that this was going to be the plan, that she wasn't going to really play, but more it was going to be a development year for her in practice. And that's why they brought over Lolo to play, 1B with Carly. And I think it worked out. And you see, like, we all see the social media posts. She's a popular player and obviously very deserving of that award. I want to put something out there to you two. I look at Buffalo, and obviously they didn't have the season they wanted to have. They didn't want to be the lovable underdog anymore, right? And it still kind of turned out that way if you look at the standings as they finished. I wonder if they're on the same path that Connecticut was on a couple of years ago, where they started to accumulate these when Colton first took over, right? And he started to accumulate players like Amanda Conway and Casey Anderson. Obviously, I think Casey was there already, but bringing in Emma Vlasic, right? Tori Howren. And you look at a lot of the players on that Connecticut roster, and yeah, they brought in a Marchment and a Monroe who had pro experience overseas. And you bring in a veteran like Janine Weber, who's a huge addition. I feel like they really built their team organically. They saw somebody they liked, right, and Taylor Girard, and they were willing to give up some picks to flip spots, which I don't think they really had to do. But, you know, kudos to Nate for working that out of them. And he gets a couple of extra picks. And, I think one of those extra picks was a Kennedy Ganzer, right? And so he added a lot of players throughout the draft. And as he posted this weekend, two overtime games, two overtime winners, both rookies from his draft class. And a lot of people were telling him that it wasn't a deep draft. So with Buffalo, everything is on the right trajectory, I feel like. And as much as it probably hurts to go through these growing pains right now, I feel like in 2-3 years from now, when we look back at this, and we see where the Buffalo team is, because I assume that most of that core will stay together. We never know, right? In women's hockey, anything could happen tomorrow. But I feel like most of that core will stay together, and they could be a big force in this league.
I agree. I also think it's looking at the standings, like, you know, Riveters had 7 wins, Whitecaps had 6, Buttes had 6. The Buttes were penalized because a bunch of their wins were OT wins, so they're worth fewer points. Regulation wins were worth more. So if you look at, like, the standings the way they used to be, the previous point system before this new point system under Ty that they introduced this year, the Buttes are much closer in the standings than they might look. But I think that's a great point you raised, Dan, about how this team is built organically. Some years when a team would be, towards the bottom of the standings, we'd be kind of scratching for silver linings is like, oh, you know, a couple of young players, it might turn around. I don't think you have to scratch that deep for this Buttes team. I think the point you raised about how they're on a similar trajectory to what the Whale were, like you think of the players who are here now, Harley, Dominique Kramer, Diffendahl, MJP, Carly Jackson, of course, Cassidy Vinkel, who we just talked about. Vinkel started the season so hot, and then she just kind of went cold in terms of production. But she is a huge addition to this team. Kennedy Ganzer, Autumn McDougal, like this team is maybe, you know, two or three, you know, first pair top line players away from being a team that's right there in the conversation with anyone. And you just need that foundation first. And I think that's what they did this year, is they developed those players are super young. You know, there's a couple of veterans who are still helping out, lending a hand, like Taylor with Silk. But yeah, I think it's definitely going in the right direction.
I'm curious to see them too in a full normal season without the COVID breaks and the weather delays. Like, you know, they got dealt, a lot of teams got dealt a pretty tough hand, but they really at the start of the season, they started that season three times with like a month off in between two games. So I want to see them in a full season, and I think we'll get a much better feel of who they are.
I don't know how exactly we're going to get there. I could not tell you game by game, goal by goal. I can tell you on the vibes alone, the Whale are winning the cup. I just don't, narratively, I don't think it is possible for there to be any other outcome this year. And I said this earlier, I don't remember if we were recording or not, but any person on that Whale roster would let their own blood onto the ice to win Shannon Doyle a cup. And they will do it if that's what it takes. And they will win her a cup, and she will retire with one. And that's, I just don't see it going any other way. But good luck to everybody trying.
Yeah, I mean, it's great because, I mean, I both love and hate the one game showdowns. I really wouldn't mind if this was the last year we had this. I want at least a three game series because I just feel like it's more fair. And we get a better answer for who's the better team. If it's not just show up and see who gets, you know, hockey is a game full of bounces and chaos, and playoff hockey is even more so. But I to be interesting, I wish I could say somebody that wasn't the Whale, but I'm on the wagon. It's the Whale.
The vessel.
I know I have a lot of the same concerns I have about their goaltending, but I'll tell you what, I underrated Fuji. And I also tell you what, that Whale defense is really deep and really good, and they can make life easy for their goaltenders. If the Whales stay disciplined and stay healthy, they are a nightmare matchup for every team in the league. And it's for a lot of things we discussed at the top of the show, like the reason they're the regular season champions. They remind me of the undefeatable Boston Pride team from a couple seasons ago, where it's, which line is it? Shit. That line's too good. Like that line's too good. Who's on the ice now? Shit. All right. They're also super. Like, what do you do? What do you do against that team? There's no, you can't take any shifts off. Otherwise you're in a lot of trouble. And like, I think like you look at the teams like, oh yeah, they have Shannon Doyle Turner. They have Tori Howren. And then like someone like Allie Monroe, how good was Allie Monroe's season, by the way, just like as a player who's making an impact in all three zones. I think she finished tied for second in D in scoring. No one's talking about Allie Monroe. That's because there's too many other great things to talk about on the Whale. I do feel like Toronto is their biggest threat. And I think Toronto's a great team. I think they probably miss Mikaela Kava more than they probably want to admit. Even though they added some players who kind of helped replace some of the aspects, you know, some of the traits she brought to the team. I can't rule out the Pride. And I think the Ribs and Whitecaps series to me comes down, do the Ribs stay out of the box? If the Ribs stay out of the box, they can hang with anyone. And if Brooke Wilenko is on her game, the Ribs can beat anyone. So I actually like the Ribs in that Whitecaps matchup, but I think at the end of the day, it's the Whale lifting Izzy.
All right, I'm going to throw, I like to be Team Chaos.
Oh, Dan.
You guys both made compelling cases for Connecticut, and I really can't argue against any of them. I don't think it's a secret. We all like a lot of the players that Connecticut has. We like the team they've assembled. They just have like a really a bunch of likable players too. Like I saw a bunch of them this weekend. And even if I wasn't doing an interview, it was just catching up with them because I hadn't seen them for so long. And it was really nice to see a lot of those faces, and just about every one of them was asking if I was coming to Florida for the playoffs, and I said no, and they were all disappointed, which made me feel really nice. Not to pat myself on the back like Barry Horowitz over here, but having said that, I'm going to go Team Chaos. I'm going to pick a Minnesota and Boston final just for the hell of it.
You're out of your mind, Dan.
I'm going to say in a one-game
setting. Again?
A one-game setting where anything can happen, and all it takes is a little bit of juju to get you going in the right way. Like, what happens if Amanda Levier shows up and, you know, and nobody knows about it, and then she steps on the ice for warm-ups and you're the rivet is across, and you're like, oh, crap, like, your head's going to blow up, right? Like she's just did the animation there. And Boston, I have a feeling like I said, like, I don't know. I feel like that power play is – there's too many good players on that team for them to be 4-for-70 on the power play. It's just insane.
Like, it hurts my head so much.
They're still there. They might have just added another player. I don't know, like, because they keep adding players, it seems like, daily and weekly.
Yeah, that's what they do.
I don't know how, you know, how it's all going to play out, but I'm going to say Team Chaos, and I'm going to say Minnesota beats Boston in the cup
final. You're picking the Whitecaps, Dan.
I'm picking the Whitecaps because
I respect it.
It's and easy to pick the Whale, right? If we could bet on these games, like if you bet the Whitecaps, like how much money are you winning right now? So not that I'm saying anybody should bet on things, but because Lord knows I don't.
DraftKings, if you're listening to this and you would like to endorse us, I am moving to a state where it is legal to gamble on sports.
I probably wanted to pick it too because I could watch Mike's head explode in like real time as I'm going through all this. So that was pretty cool.
He's about to ask you, what do you know that we don't know?
I think he just wants chaos.
I will say this for the Whitecaps. They have all the experience in the world, right? Like, you know, there's that team is...
They've seen it all, right? I mean,
yeah, that team has seen it all. And, you know, what we were talking to Pizan is like, oh, yeah, I was coaching Jenna Brenneman when she
was 10 like, years old.
Yeah, when Jenna was 10 years old, I was coaching her. And now you're on the same team.
That's wild.
I think you've been around for a bit. I think you know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Speaking of chaos.
Before we move on to chaos, I want to, I've kind of teased to you guys a little bit about this, and we were on the kind of topic of the teams left standing. Oh, every team's left standing, but I hear there's going to be a game after the playoffs between a pair of PHF teams. A source told me it's probably very likely that it's going to happen. I don't know that it's a done deal, but I believe it's pretty close. And they're going to be playing at a neutral site.
And Lenny, where do you want this game to be played?
I obviously want it to be played in Denver.
I want it on top of a skyscraper or...
Oh, like a funny answer?
Yeah, I want it on a cruise ship where there are no wheels.
Well, there would be wheels if there are players from this league, because many of them are very fast.
Oh my God, Lenny.
I want them to
stretch
play
before
it.
You reach that hard. Good grief.
I didn't think it was a reach.
I'm ear to ear.
I want them to play adorable. It at the Atlanta Thrashers old practice rink in Duluth, Georgia.
Well, you said you're moving to Colorado, right?
Yeah, I'm moving to Denver in a week, a little over a week.
You might be a little bit closer to where they're going to be playing than the rest of us are going to be.
Ooh, well, I will be there then.
I can say where it is. It's Tulsa, Oklahoma, is what I heard.
Oklahoma.
The two teams.
The Tulsa Oilers.
Where the wind comes sweeping down the plains?
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plains.
That will be playing there will be, they share an ownership, I guess, is the best way I can explain it. So that narrows it down even more for you guys, right?
So that's the Anaheim Ducks ECHL team. I had to look it up because I didn't remember. I have all the AHL ones, but interesting.
So who owns the Tulsa Who's the Wetsies?
Well, the
is it well, Anthony Stewart? I see who
the general manager is, and it says the general manager is Taylor Hall, but it can't possibly be.
What are you
Taylor on? Hall cannot be.
Different guy. It's a different guy, guys. It's a different guy.
When I'm not playing for the Boston Bruins, I'm the GM of an ECHL team. All right.
And we will also be hosting a women's pro showcase game in Oklahoma.
What I was told is there's going to be a game in Tulsa. Not every player is able to be there, I think, because of, you know, scheduling.
Being in Tulsa.
Yeah. We already have had plans. But it's going to be Minnesota and Buffalo playing in Tulsa in some kind of...
Ooh.
Andy Skurdo.
Oh, we know that name. I mean, that's wild. I'm all for more hockey. I think, like, when you first hinted at something like this to me, I was like, Champions Cup? Champions Cup comeback? Mike likes Champions Cup. Pretty please? Pretty please, Champions Cup? I just think that would be great if we get to have that one day again, because...
I'm going, so...
Yeah. I need a Champions Cup.
From Denver. That's
it. Doesn't matter. I'll walk if I have to.
Welcome back to the Future Considerations podcast. And although Eleni isn't here with us for this part, we did get a chance to speak with Megan Pizon, one of the Minnesota Whitecaps players, coming off of a very nice season again for the Whitecaps. She's been with them for quite a long time, and we're really excited. I know I am. Mike, I know you're excited too, right?
Yeah, super underrated player. Has been really, not just, you know, the collegiate and before the Whitecaps went pro, but she's one of those players where she helps, like, the superstars on Minnesota shine brighter. Like, that's the sort of player she is. She makes the players around her better. I'm always big on playmakers. Playmakers never get enough love. And Pizon is one of those players who's always racking up primary assists, always making pretty passes. And we got to learn a lot about her and her game and kind of help set the stage for Riveters Whitecaps, which is fun because that's the way their regular season is. A two-game, you know, weekend series, and now winner takes all. So we got to talk to her about that and a lot more.
We are pleased to be joined tonight by a very special guest. She plays for the Minnesota Whitecaps for pretty much since they've been around in Minnesota, but the last couple of years in the NWHL and the PHF now. We're pleased to welcome Megan Pizon to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
And we just saw you actually this past weekend in New Jersey. You guys played some crazy back and forth games with the Riveters.
Yeah.
And that's a team that you're going to be getting very familiar with over the next week or so, I assume, with like watching video and looking back on your matchups with them. You're going to meet them in the playoffs again, which we're all really looking forward to because both of your teams never really disappoint us when you get together, especially in the playoffs, as you know.
Yeah.
So how did you see those games unfolding over the weekend?
They were great games. Like you said, we've had some good games against the Riveters in the past. I think last time we played them in the playoffs, pre-bubble, it was 1-0, and it was kind of a crazy game. So the games this weekend were good. I think it gives us a good test. We know what to expect from the Riveters, and they know what to expect from us too. So it'll be a battle. So it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. But because we were talking earlier too, it's like we haven't seen Boston since like November. So it's like at least we get started off an opponent we know pretty well. So
there won't be any secrets. Like they're not going to come out and it's not, they're not going to throw something at you they haven't seen in a couple of months.
Right. Exactly.
Fresh exactly. In your mind.
Yep.
So our first question that we have is, how do you pick your number? I did a little research. I saw an old picture, pre NWHL days where you had a Whitecaps jersey on with the number 6.
Okay. Yeah.
But now you wear the number 15. Is there any science to that? Any rhyme or reason?
The only reason I was wearing 6 in that picture is because it's the only jersey we had at the time. So I think everybody that signed that year wore that jersey. But I've been wearing number 15 since basically I started playing. I started playing hockey when I was 5 years old, so I wanted to be number five. And then my dad told me that the best players were the same number every year, but five was already taken the next year, so I took 15, and I've pretty much been 15 ever since.
I love it. So recently we got to see, speaking of some of the Whitecaps history, we got to see you wear the retro jerseys with the old school logo. I was wondering what it was like seeing those come out, because I was one of those people like, I remember the old Whitecaps logo.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's kind of a wild logo. But then seeing it on the jersey, I think it looks great. I kind of wish it was like the regular alternate almost, because it's so gorgeous. But I was wondering what it was like to put on those jerseys again, and if it meant anything special to the team to have the old logo, you know, and that jersey rollout.
It was super cool, and the jerseys were awesome. I mean, just even going back to that old gold color that we had, the gold, black, and white that we used to be, and it was super special to get Brooke in the lineup for that game, too, because her dad is the one that created the logo back, you know, in 2004, so it was, you know, special for her, and it was just cool, and I, for pregame warm-ups, I brought, you know, back in, gosh, like 2012 or 13, they made us these, like, neon t-shirts with that logo on it, so I brought that jersey to the rink, so it was super fun. It's a great logo. A lot of great memories, you know, pre-NWHL, PHF. So it was a ton of fun.
It's been a little bit of a weird year for your team. Something your group isn't really used to, not winning a lot.
Yeah.
that's putting it bluntly, I guess, with the, yeah, you know, you, the way where you're finished in the standings now with, you know, your games are finished. But why do you think that fans shouldn't dismiss your team? Not that we are, but if there are any Whitecaps fans out there, how do you reinforce that that positivity that they have and belief in your team?
Well, I think right now, you know, especially after the last weekend, we're kind of in a good spot where, you know, ever since Lev got injured, we've had a goalie play two games in a row and, you know, just kind of getting some consistency back. And I think, you know, through all the adversity we face this year, we have the skill in the locker room, and we have the, you know, we have the talent to make a run here. We just got to put it all together, and that's what we're going to do. You know, we got practice tonight and, you know, take this kind of week off to just regroup and reset and, you know, going with that mindset that it's one game at a time and, you know, not look at all three of them, but just one at a time, right? You got to beat the Ribs on Friday and then, you know, whoever we may see or Saturday, and then it's just one game at a time at this point, so.
So, as you know, I'm the stats dork, the resident stats dork in women's hockey, and on this podcast, you've always stood out to me as one of those players who always picking up primary assists. Playmaking is obviously such a big part of your game. I always feel like playmakers never get quite as much credit, right? It's who scored the goal, who's leading the celebration line on the bench.
Yep.
And I wonder, like, a player like you who has, like, you're so good at developing chemistry, so good at creating plays, what is it like on a team with the Whitecaps where you have a lot of targets to pass to, but some of them, like Allie Thunstrom, like, are born with, like, a rocket on their back?
Yeah.
Like, do you have to be aware of, like, passing to areas? Like, oh, yeah, for Allie, this one has to be, like, another 8 inches ahead of where it might normally need to be.
Yeah. Well, I guess, like, especially playing with Allie, I've been playing with her for long enough now where I know that if I put the puck at least in front of her, she's probably going to win the race. So
it's a safe bet, yeah.
Yeah, you know, as long as I can get it behind the D, I got a good shot at picking up an assist there, so. Playing with Allie is really fun because she's, you know, like you said, just like got a rocket strapped to her back, and, you know, and then it's just fun because it kind of takes a little pressure off where you don't have to like have pinpoint accuracy on any of your passes. Like you said, you just put it into an area and, you know, majority of the time she's going to win the race of that puck. So, or beat out an icing if I don't, you know, if I don't put it there for her. But I think it comes from coaching too, like playing with the little kids, coaching, and like, you're just trying to, like, we may have competitions coaching, like how many assists did you get in that, you know, 3-on-3 game kind of stuff. So I think that's kind of where it started.
Just to follow up on that, you've played with Allie a really long time, as we've discussed in our talks this season. Are you ever still amazed at, you know, some of the goals she scores and some of the plays she makes? We saw her score a bunch of goals this weekend.
Yep.
The one that I know Mike was there for, you know, she just kind of hop, skipped, and jumped, and the next thing you know, she was by like everybody and snapped the shot past the goalie. But yeah, do you ever still get amazed when you, and you see her every day in practice too, so are you ever amazed at some of the things that she's still able to pull off?
I mean, I don't want to say amazed because it, like, I've been, like you said, watching it for so long, but I think the one thing that, like, when she gets going at full speed and she takes it to the net the way she does, which is incredible, I get so nervous when she like runs into the goalie or something that she's just going to take a crash into the end boards. But she's just so fun to watch and fun to play with and a great teammate. And so I don't want to say that I'm not amazed because I am, but I feel like I've seen it all at this point. So
to your point, we saw her crash into the boards this weekend.
Yep.
So that's, I think I've seen her play three times this year and two of the games that happened.
Yep.
I've seen it happen, watching from home. So it's, we echo that sentiment. Yeah. We're always kind of like, cringing and it looked like she was hurt pretty bad this weekend, but thankfully we have a week off.
It'll be nice to have a week off. It'll be good. I think it'll be good for everybody.
So kind of building on like the playmaking stuff and your teammates, how important is it to have that awareness of the tendencies of your team? Like the Whitecaps in general are a fast team. There's a lot of players you can skate with you. Like obviously you're a great skater yourself, but when your role is like, I'm the playmaking center on this team, I'm pulling the strings, I'm trying to make things happen at even strength, trying to put players in a position where they have a shooting lane. How important is it to kind of have that book in your head of like, oh, this is where Jonna's going to be. This is where Allie's going to be, right? Like knowing what your teammates' tendencies are within your team systems.
Yeah, I think it's important. But I don't think it's as important as like people maybe tend to think it is. Like for me, it's more about like knowing what the other team is doing. Like where do they leave people open and where do they, what are their tendencies on a 3-on-2 rush? Do they, kind of stuff like that. So for me, it's more like seeing what the other team does and where the openings are going to be and where, do they cover the points really well? Or can I, is that a way to spread them out or, in the neutral zone? But just kind of stuff like that. So, but I think that's really helped me just kind of be able to play with anybody. Obviously, playing with Allie and Jonna most of the last 2 years has been great. But like I said, it's nice to be able to play with everybody. So
sounds like a lot of game film helps playmaking centers. Is that right? Like knowing where to exploit a defense, looking for holes in the defense, knowing where you can set your teammates up.
Yep. I like to watch hockey, so I'm kind of a dork like that too.
Have the right job for it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you explain to the fans out there and to us as well, because we don't have that experience of you've played in these winner take all playoff games where it's you win and you move on, or you win the championship, or you lose and your season is over. You've played in a bunch of those. What is that like? How is it different from maybe a feeling or a vibe from a regular season game?
Like, I don't know, it's a tough question, but there's just so much more intensity to it, right? Like, it's like, not that you're not paying attention to details in the regular season, but you really got to pay attention to those details and make sure that you're, on your game and doing the little things. And, you may think you're covering someone in the D zone, but they're 6 on the ice, they can still score a goal, or, blocking a shot and stuff like that. And again, not that that's not looked at in the regular season, but everything is just intensified and just even more important, right? Like you don't want to go down. It just, everything is just so intensified that it just makes it fun and special. And I don't know, I'm looking forward to it.
Your last year, you guys played in the cup final and you score a goal with 19 seconds left.
Yep.
Ultimately a team doesn't win the game, but that's one of those high pressure moments where you're looking for who's going to come through and you were, you found yourself in a prime spot. What do you remember about that? And, how much does that loss maybe still sit with you?
Yeah, that was a fun goal to score for sure. I don't know. I just remember I was like, I'm going to stand in front of the net and this goalie is not going to see the puck. And that's like, I got enough speed out there. They can go get the puck. I just, make sure that, she doesn't see it. And I forget how it popped out to me, but I mean, I think I was in the crease and I think that was the hardest puck I've ever shot. Like just making sure it goes in. And then after I remember thinking like, we need to call a timeout and draw something up because we can do this. And, we were kind of buzzing at the end there, but it's still there. It's still, stings. I remember after the game, I don't know if I've ever lost a championship game before. Like obviously, coming third place, fourth place, whatever, but I've never lost a championship game. And I always thought that if I did lose a championship, I'd be like the one that's like crying. Like, I don't want to take, I was so mad. Oh my God. I've never been out of the locker room so fast in my life. I was just like, you can hear them celebrate because their locker room's right across the hall. And I'm like, yeah, I just got to get out of here. So that motivation will be there, come next Friday for sure.
So this kind of ties into some of the stuff we've talked about already. But like one of the things that I love about the pro women's game is you get to see players continue to develop their skills, right? You get to see players build on these things. Like, oh, you know, one of the strengths of the Whitecaps is there's just so much experience, so many players. You've had those big clutch moments, right, where you've been through these crucibles. You have to come out the other end of it a better player who knows how to do more.
Yep.
And I don't think we get to talk a lot about, like, what have you, like, how players develop after the collegiate game, and, like, what have you added, do you think, the most in your game since your college hockey days? Like, what skills or what areas of the game do you think have most improved to make you the more complete player you are now?
Yeah, and I think it's funny, and you know, obviously I'm, like, super happy for everyone coming up now, but I think when I was, like, 24, about 10 years ago, I was working at a hockey academy, and I was like, gosh, I am the best hockey player I have ever been right now. And it's like, okay, we get 3 practices, and then we're going to go play the Gophers, and then we wait, you know, 3 months. So it's like, there really is nowhere to, like, develop. I think, like I said, a lot of my skills have come just from coaching, because you got to demonstrate things to these kids, and you got to, you know, work on that kind of stuff. So I think a lot of that post-college for me has come from coaching, and I'm just glad that, you know, there's an opportunity now for people to continue playing, continue to, you know, consistently practice and play and, you know, be in a league. And so I just think that's awesome. And I'm really happy for, you know, obviously myself to be a part of it, but also the kids, you know, coming out of college now too, that they get to experience that.
You think you're any better at face-offs now than you were in college? Something like that, where it's like, oh yeah, you've done this a couple thousand times, right?
It's face-offs are funny to me. I'm either on or I'm off. And when I'm off, I'm off. But I don't know. I didn't actually play center in college. I played wing and defense. I actually played defense most of my life, but I didn't start playing center until I started playing for the Whitecaps. So it's kind of funny to me. Like, I like, not learn the rules. I knew the rules, but, like, I was, like, Googling, like, how to be good at face-offs. And it was just like little things like, oh, if you're the home team, you can put your stick down second. And I was like, okay, that's huge, because then I know where her stick's going to be. So I try to not cheat, but try to bend the rules as much as I can to try to win a draw.
It's a little more art than science, right? Face-offs, yeah. Like, you'd think, like, someone would have cracked the case, figure out how do you win most of the time. But it feels like it's chaotic and really just about reaction time and everything else.
Yeah. And there are some times where I'm like taking the drama. Ooh, dang, she's just a lot stronger than I am. I'm like, that's good for you. I'm happy for you.
You mentioned your coaching, and something that you mentioned to me in some of our discussions earlier this season. There's somebody on your team that you coached before, right?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of girls on our team that I've coached before. Let's see, I coached Jenna Brenneman, Megan Lawrence, Nicole Shamel. I coached against Maddie Rowe and Taylor Turnquist. So, yeah, there's a bunch of them.
Okay. I was referencing Brenneman. I didn't know about everybody
else. Well, Brenneman, Brenneman, yep. I coached her a lot.
I just remember you saying, I coached her, like, when she was, like, 10 years old. And
Yeah, known her since she was 10 years old.
And now she's your teammate. That's got to
be. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It is. Definitely come full circle. That's for sure.
I don't know. There's all this hate over these math questions. I'll ask you another numbers question, but it's not right. Math, which is.
All right, I like it.
I'm always curious. We're seeing more and more. Like, I know it was really popular in the men's game, that we saw it more in the women's game with, like, 3-on-3 OT, like 4-on-4 OT, with when things open up. Like, because to me, it's always so interesting. What's like, oh, is it? How much of it is tactics and how much of it is, like, just go out there and play, right? Go out there and make a play. And obviously it feels like the biggest thing is keep the puck. If you keep the puck, you're not going to get scored on.
Yep.
But do you like the big open ice in OT now, or is it a different feeling? Or is it like when you're on the ice, just can't make a mistake, otherwise it's a breakaway?
Yeah, no, I like the open ice. I like my time and space, and you know, I played at St. Cloud State, and that's an Olympic rink. So I'm very familiar with the ice, but I think it's just exciting too. You know, you get more opportunities, and for me, I'm more of a just go out and play, don't think about it too much. But there have been a couple times at practices this season where we've played 3-on-3 and Jack is just yelling, like, don't leave your player. Oh boy. So he's like, yeah, that's pretty funny. But, you know, I guess it depends on the person, but I'm definitely more of a just go out and play. And
I love your Twitter handle, I guess it's called MVP_Zahn15.
Yep.
I want to give you, and I want to you know, I'm going to put it out there for everybody to follow you, but I also wanted to give you props because a lot of your fellow women hockey players have zero creativity. I'm putting it out there. It's my name and my number or my, you know, sort of nickname and yeah. a couple of numbers.
It's funny because I was that way where I think it was like just MPs on 15. But then my sister, hers was just P's on 15. So when, like, I would sign and then, you know, I the Whitecaps would tag her in all the posts and not me. So I had to change it so they weren't, like, so similar. So my middle name is Virginia. So it's Megan Virginia Pizon. So that's where the MVP comes from.
Okay.
So I'm not really that creative.
All right. No, we'll stick with the creativity. We that and we learned something, which is also fun.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've heard any of this nonsense on the internet, but it's dividing this podcast.
Here we go.
Uh-oh.
I'm the only one who feels this way. The okay. question, of course, is, are there more doors or wheels in the world?
I love this.
Now, before you give us your answer, I want to remind everyone that wheels are in a lot of things. That's all I'm going to say. That might be leading the witness or whatever you want to call it or influencing, but wheels are everywhere.
But almost everything that has wheels has doors.
Oh my God.
I don't know. I was just on Twitter before I got on with you guys and I saw Bruce Boudreau got asked that question too. I hadn't watched it yet, but I've heard it's pretty funny. So
you should watch that. He gave a great response.
Okay. Yeah. I'm excited to watch it.
All right. Well, cars have four wheels, four doors, right? Spare tire, steering wheel.
Okay.
Two more wheels on every car.
Well, I guess I didn't think of it that way, but for right now, maybe I'll check back with you when I change my mind. For right now, I'm all doors.
I'm very passionate about this because Eleni, who isn't here because she's on a train right now, brought up cruise ships, and I pointed out to her there's like 600 cruise ships in the world, and like yeah. she's acting like that's going to win the debate, and like. You're acting like there's a cruise ship parked on every street. It's not
yeah.
the case.
But, yeah, no, I like that one. That's a good one.
it's something that's tearing families and friend groups apart.
I can see it by the reactions here. So I apologize. I couldn't help you.
It's okay. I just, you know, I'll find a way to persevere. But obviously, thank you so much for your time. I'm glad you, like the team and you have the week off to get healed up, you know, rest any aching bones, bruises, yeah. everything else. Because, you know, we were saying before we started recording, it's unbelievable that the season for at this stage for the Whitecaps is over. But it was a wild one. And, you know, we know the season's expanding next year and
yep.
don't know your plans. But, you know, I hope I speak for everyone. I know I do when we hope to see you play a lot longer in this yeah. league. So
well, I hope
best
so
of luck too. And, you know, not going to say, you know, we hope you win because, you know, unbiased and all that stuff, but we hope you have a great game.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you guys very much.
All right. That was awesome. That was Megan Pizon of the Minnesota Whitecaps, a great veteran player who's been in this league, been playing the pro game for a long time. And now we're going to get a different perspective from more of a younger player who, although she already has a couple pretty big moments in the pro game, including an Isabel Cup clinching goal, seems pretty big deal. Next up is Taylor Winskowski of the Boston Pride.
Taylor, thank you so much for joining us.
Mike, I'm glad you tweeted that the video of my celebration. I was trying to get people to do that all weekend.
Yeah, I got that. I was like, well, that's pretty great. That was
the Superman one?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
So what's the story with that? Is that like a thing?
I don't know. I just went up to people on the team. I was like, hey, I was mostly going up to Friday. I was like, hey, when you score, you need to do the celebration. But Dems actually tipped my shot, so I didn't actually score, but I did it. I didn't know till after we went through the line that she got it. I knew it hit something out front, I just wasn't sure. And then, like, people were skating to me, so I kind of just assumed I got it, but I would do it in warm-ups when my line would score in warm-ups, so.
I was wondering if Dems got that, because she was high in the slot, and I was like, that may have been a high stick, but we're not going to talk about
they
it, because it was such
it.
A pretty
yeah,
tip.
Exactly. There was no review, yeah, that's a goal.
It was too good of a, I hate when it's like, just let it be a high stick. It's so good of a tip. Let it stand. I don't know.
It wasn't dangerous. Exactly. It's fine.
Yeah. No, everyone's wearing a mask. Everyone's wearing a cage. We're good. Let the goal stand. Yeah.
Seriously. Well, it worked out.
Yeah, it did. So you're having a big year. You share the team lead in points right now. I don't know if you know that.
Pretty cool. I I didn't really pay too much attention to it. You know, I'm just sick of losing right now. So it's mostly just trying to win. But it's been pretty cool. I guess the last, like, what, 7-8 games. I've had a point almost every game, which is cool. I didn't really notice that until there was, like, a tweet saying something. I had, like, 6-game point streak. And I was like, oh, I guess that's right. But, yeah.
Do you feel like anything has, like, changed over the last couple games that's clicked for you? Or it's just kind of organically happening?
Probably just, like, organically happening. And I'm trying not to, like, think too much about anything, really. Like, I've been trying to, like, mix up my pregame rituals before we get on the ice and stuff. Just have fun. Like, this weekend, I let people on the team just, like, tape my stick a weird way for warm-ups. Just, I don't know, like, Freeze and McKenna did, like, a candy cane on the blade of my stick and wrote me notes. And then the first game was even weirder. It was just, like, 2 strips right in the middle and then a piece of tape on the bottom. I don't know. Just trying to have fun and just, like, not worry too much about, you know, points or my performance. We all know how to play hockey, so I think if we just let loose and have fun, then organically, like, we'll play better, we'll play looser, and that's really, like, how we're going to play our best hockey right now. Obviously, you want to focus, and we obviously care, but at the same time, it's, you don't want to overthink, and, you know, we're at one of the highest levels we can play at, so we might as well enjoy it rather than gripping the stick too tight or stressing out too much, you know?
Yeah, it seems to be working for you, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, but it's been a tough couple weekends, but I think once our backs are against the wall, hopefully we can figure it out, you know?
Kind of building off of that, it feels like everyone knows, looking at the roster, like, I'm sure you look around the locker room and you see, like, there's so much talent in this team. I forget, like, I think the Boston Pride were, like, half of the All-Stars I saw this year, right? It's one of those things where, like, that's a whole bunch. You see all that talent, and then, you know, it's a 10-5-5 record at the end of the season, which, by all accounts, is a really good record. It's 5 games above 500, but I know, you know, from speaking to some of your teammates, to speaking to, like, some folks in the front office and coach, like, this team is frustrated because you guys know you can be better than that record, and you are better than that record. Is that what it's like in the locker room right now? It's like, all right, well, the regular season was over, it's frustrating, and now, whatever. Close the door on that.
Let's a pretty good discussion after the game yesterday. And I had brought up, like, how last year, I obviously don't want to bring up last year because it's a completely different team, different league. You know, the dynamics are way different. But last year, we were not in a good place right before playoffs. You know, we struggled at the bubble. And then once all the games that really mattered, once we had our backs against the wall, that's when, like, the energy on the bench was amazing. Like, you could see the videos of, like, the 2 of 3 game series that we won, like the last 2 games against Buffalo. Anytime someone scored, whether it was first goal of the game or the 6th or 7th goal of the game, the entire bench was jumping up and down. Like, someone made a good play in the defensive zone, everyone was cheering. And I think that's what we need to get back to. That was what really helped our success last year. And I think if we, you know, not fake it till you make it, but, like, really just celebrate the goalie makes a good save, just, you know, cheer them on. It's, the bench has been kind of dead. So I think that's also been a factor of the frustration and maybe the part of the reason we're not as successful as we could be.
It makes a lot of sense. I think about that a lot, especially, you know, with the way it's so ironic to me that we have these two game weekend series and then in the playoffs it just comes down to one game. And I always wonder about, like, the sports psychology behind that and how easy it is to maybe play a little tight, play a little tense. And I feel like in a lot of cases, like you said, with your teammates, like taping up your stick, little things like that, just celebrating like a big clear on the PK, something like that. Get loud, get loose. Like, it makes such a difference, right? It gets everyone to breathe a little better, perform better, and just go out and play your game.
Well, Taylor, you mentioned you played against the Buttes this past weekend, and you're going to see them again on Friday. What are the advantages or disadvantages to playing against a team that you know pretty well now? All 4 of the games this season were one-goal games. 2 of them, last 2, go to overtime. So what are the advantages to that for you guys?
The advantages, well, first we beat them the first 2 games, right? And then now we're fresh off a weekend with them. So we know their antics, their strengths, and, you know, their tendencies. We always know that number four is going to dive out at the puck. I was roommates with her in college my freshman year, so MJ is going to always be aggressive. You know, you can't make a cross ice pass and she's on the ice. She's going to read it really well, like she always has. I made a few of those mistakes this weekend, being like, oh, you know what? I'm going to try to hit Petinia across the ice, and MJ just dives out. Like, that's something our whole team knows, that we just need to make those, you know, smaller passes and get everyone moving. But yeah, I think obviously advantage is definitely knowing that, like, you know, some of their strengths. We saw, you know, some good things from them this past weekend, and we know what to expect moving forward into Friday.
Now, would you rather have it this way, where, you know, it just kind of worked out that you played Buffalo two games and then now you're going to see them again? But like a team like Minnesota, you guys played four times at the beginning of the season. That I would assume would be a little bit more challenging, and you would all be watching a lot more film and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, probably, I'd say. Just because, you know, they've had time to figure things out, just like we've had time to make adjustments and change some things as well. So is to our advantage as well that the Buffalo games are so fresh, and we'll play them three times in, what, six days, seven days. So
who would you say out of your teammates on the Pride, who would you say is the most intense player?
Jillian Dempsey. Absolutely.
What makes She's her amazing. Intense? What,
she like, just, her passion is unlike any passion I've ever seen firsthand. Like, she just is an amazing person, whether it's like just little things, just being like super welcoming. And then on the ice, like every time, whether it's practice or game, she always gives 110%, and I could never like imagine her not trying, if that makes sense. Like, she always has her prove people wrong attitude, and she always says PPW. Like, she truly like walks and breathes that. And like, obviously the reason why she is our captain, our leader, like, no questions asked. She, I think, would be a captain on any team she played on, no matter who else is on that team. She's just naturally a great human and just a true leader, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, get that impression.
Hard to disagree with that. You know, absolutely, following the league and watching Demps for a lot of years, all that resonates in a big way. That's what she's all about, right? The consummate pro, last out of the locker room, last off the ice, all those things. That's what Demps is all about. So we know, we kind of could have guessed that Demps is, you know, the super intense one on the team. I think what folks might like to understand is, like, who helps keep things light? Like, you have someone like Dempsey who's laser focused, like, we're going to get this done, rally the troops. Who's the one who gets just enough giggles going so that everyone's loose enough before puck drops, ridiculous on the team bus, ridiculous in the hotel, whatever it is? And so who's doing the pranks, and who's the target of the pranks, and why isn't it coach?
I feel like there's a handful of people that I could say. Amanda Bouye, she definitely gets people laughing before games. I'd say I give Paul the hardest time, though. I definitely like to rip him. So we have a lot of fun with it, but he gives it right back. But I'd say probably my whole line as well. We try to keep things pretty loose, and it's pretty contagious in the locker room, I'd say. There's like a good mix of the focus and then also just having fun and making jokes and just keeping it light. So it's, I think that was a big difference when, like the beginning of the year, I started with Freeze and Christina. And we had like a lot of success at the beginning of the year in preseason. And then through Minnesota, Paul ended up switching us up a little bit, just, I think, to just really get some more lines moving, and rolling. But now we're back together, and I mean, it was a little bit of an adjustment, but I think we're starting to figure it out again. But yeah, it's a lot of fun playing with them. And I think when you're having fun, you're going to continue to play better, and that's going to help the team success in the long run.
Makes a lot of sense to me. I can't help but add this one question, because when I was in Newark, when you were playing the Rivs, I saw the team getting on the bus, and it occurred to me that seeing Demps load her gear onto the bus and then getting onto a bus that has like a giant Dempsey face on it, What was your reaction the first time you saw that team bus? And has it ever crossed your mind to get like a dry erase marker, give her like an eye patch or maybe black out one of the teeth, something like that?
The first time I saw the team bus with her face on it, I took a selfie with it. So, yeah. No, I've never thought about pulling a prank on her on the bus, but it's just really cool to see. You know, I think Mal is up there as well.
Yeah.
But no, it's cool to, you know, have a face on the bus and people that drive by it can be like, oh, you know, the Boston Pride captain, like, who is that? What are they about? You know, so I think that's pretty cool for not only her and for her team, but also our fans and the people that will see the bus on the highway or wherever else it may be. So,
yeah, smart, very absolutely. Smart marketing.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip this. I'm going to let Eleni ask the last question on here, but I want to ask you about, you know, you obviously you scored the cup winning goal last year with the playoffs on the horizon. How much confidence does that give you to know that, like, when you know, when it's all on the line, you've come through in the clutch and you have that kind of in your DNA?
Yeah. Obviously, try not to think too much about last year because it's so different, but it is nice, you know, being able to look back and see that moment and think of how, like, calm and collected I felt the entire playoffs last year. I feel like I've never really felt that in college. Last year I had absolutely no doubt, and even this year I'm very confident in our team that we'll figure it out, especially once we get our games rolling. And obviously don't want to be too overconfident, but I think it just says a lot about the trust I have in my team and what we have in each other. But definitely nice to have that in the back of my mind, you know, knowing that I can do that. So yeah, it's cool, but I don't think it's really truly hit me that happened. I just wanted to win so bad. I'd never been able to throw my gloves up in the air, and the fact that I was able to, one, do that and then have that impact on the team too is really special.
It'll really hit you in like 10 years when the league is still going. Oh, yeah. And we see these championship highlights of championships, and your name will always be mentioned, yeah, as the one who had the cup winning goal in that year. I think that's awesome, and you should, something you should definitely be very proud, yeah, of.
Yeah, and Michelle got an awesome picture of that too. So that's actually, I have the silhouette of that as part of my logo of my hockey company I just started up. So thank you, Michelle, for capturing that awesome moment and allowing me to, you know, use that for my logo too.
We want to hear more about your hockey company, but before, I'm going to ask you about that too, but before I ask you about that, we asked our other player interview this question, so we have to ask you. And it's very controversial. And okay, like I said, it's pre-recorded, so you can decide what you do or don't want us to publish. But I'm sure you've seen the discourse about this. I need to know, are there more wheels or doors in the world?
Before you said that, in my head, I knew you were going to say that. I think wheels.
Why do you think wheels?
Wow.
Well, I saw a TikTok recently, and it was like the same thing, wheels or doors. And it was like in a factory and it had all these wheels under some bindings and, yeah, stuff. So I was like, okay, I think wheels.
There's wheels in everything, Eleni.
Yeah.
My thing is just that I think
there are wheels of cheese.
It depends on how you define wheels. But I'm not here to argue. I just wanted to know your opinion. I appreciate it. I will fight with Mike when we are not taking up your time. And you can listen to it on the podcast because sure we're gonna be
gonna get a jersey. I gotta get a jersey for Taylor now.
All right,
that's all I needed to know. Team wheels.
I'm a team doors person. I know, it's fine. But okay, so the last thing is, because you did mention your hockey company, what can you tell us a little bit about, like, what made you want to start that and what that's been like for you to do that in season?
I've always wanted to do something like this, but I've honestly, like, the last 2 years, once I moved down to Boston, I've been doing private lessons. And I never thought it would get to this point as quickly as it did, because I was working at a gym doing lessons there, doing like synthetic ice stuff and treadmill skating and shooting treadmill and stuff. But I've just had some really good support was even some of the clients' parents that had got me in touch with people to, you know, help me out with designing a website. And then it turned from getting a website going to reaching out to different rinks about ice, and then getting in contact with someone else that would help me with like registrations and everything. So like a lot of it's just been, I think, from the good support system I've had, and a lot of people being like, you know, I want to help you and give you a little bit of my time to help women's hockey and help advance women's hockey. And I've always wanted to somehow be involved with coaching when I was older. I wasn't sure if it was going to be like college coaching or coaching, you know, kids. But I think one of the biggest things for my decision to start this up is really just the people that helped me get to where I am today. Like the coaches I've had, I think every player is going to have at least two or three coaches that made a huge impact for them and really, like, you know, help them get to where they are. And I have those coaches when I look back to my upcoming with hockey, and that's something I want to, you know, be able to offer for the future generation of kids that are going to play in our league or want to play in our league. So I think, yeah, really just giving back and helping people achieve their goals, and just giving them an opportunity to like practice their craft and give them tools that have helped me get to where I am, help them. So at the end of the day, I think it's just really just wanting to give back and give players the opportunity to live out their dream and play at the highest level they possibly can.
Cool.
When does it get started, or have you started already?
I've been doing the private lessons, but my first, well, I've had a few like mini camps, but I have an April vacation camp, and it's like April 19th, but then I have weekly skills clinics starting April 24th on Sundays. So I have Sundays and Mondays in the spring, and then I have 10 weeks of that in summer as well. And then I have three different locations of a camp this summer. One's in New Hampshire. I have a U13 group and then a high school / prep school girl group. So the U13s at all places are co-ed. And then, like, obviously the older kids, I just narrowed it down to girls. I feel like that I'd have a better connection there, and it would be good to separate at that age. And then I have U13 and high school prep school girls in Wilmington, Mass. And then I have a high school Cape Cod camp.
Awesome. TWHockeyAcademy.com, is that right?
Yep, it is.
Well, thanks so much, Taylor. This was awesome. We really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Taylor.
That was great. Now we have an idea of where the Whitecaps and the Pride stand on the wheel versus door debate. If you are a hockey player and you are listening to this and you would like us to take your opinion on wheels versus doors into account, I will be holding an unofficial poll, keeping track of which players feel there are more wheels and which players feel there are more doors. And I will give the results of this poll if anybody actually does DM me to tell me what their opinion is.
There's more doors in a hockey rink, I'll give you that.
There's more doors like in a skyscraper. There's more doors on a cruise ship.
All right, you brought up cruise ships.
Think about Venice. There's like no wheels in Venice, right? Because there's no roads. But there's so many doors in Venice because there's people that live there.
There's no wheels in my apartment. I have multiple doors. I have like two walk-in closets over there. I have a closet over there.
This guy's got two walk-in closets. Did you hear him say that? He's got two walk-in closets. What a flex. Unbelievable.
It's all filled with hats, I'm sure, because it's Dan.
Well, one hockey jersey.
Speaking of chaos.
Chaos.
We are recording this on Monday, March 21st, 2022.
Oh, God. Here we go.
As of this moment, allegedly there is to be a meeting of the minds on Wednesday. I'm making it sound probably way more structured and formal than it will probably be, but
there's going to be catering for sure. Like, you have, if they're all going to meet in a room with the NHL, there's got to be,
nice eating catering. That's such a waste of money. Someone should invite me so that I can eat whatever they cater. The PHF, the PWHPA, and the NHL are all going to meet in a room and talk about the great breakup. And I don't know, it's some kind of domestic reconciliation attempt. I'm not really sure. I don't think anybody is really sure exactly what the end goal of this is.
So Gary Bettman's going to say,
now why can't you girls play nice?
No, here's what I actually think is going to happen. And I, since Dan decided he was going to go full chaos, I'm going to do it too. Yes. Here's what I actually think is going to happen. What I actually think is going to happen is that the NHL is going to get them in a room and say, if you both fold and cede ownership and control, we will take over. And one of them maybe says yes, and one of them absolutely is not saying yes. And it's going to be really ugly, and it's not going to make anything better. And I think that a lot of people have had some hesitance since this was announced, and I don't think that that's misplaced. I think the fact that this meeting was leaked at all is proof that someone is not operating in good faith, because clearly they didn't expect that the meeting was going to be leaked. I don't know who leaked it, but it just, it feels bad, and I don't trust any of it. And also, the playoffs are happening this weekend in the PHF. Why are we having a meeting on Wednesday? Who's going to be there? Certainly not the players. Like, who's representing them? They don't have a PA director. Who's going to be there? The investors? Okay, so they're making a decision without the players. That's fun. Who's going to be there from the PWHPA? I'm assuming Jana Hefford, but who's going to be there from the NHL? You really think Gary Bettman's going to get in a room with them? Or is he going to have someone like
Bill Daly?
Yeah, someone else is going to come tell them what Gary Bettman thinks. Like, I don't know, you guys. We'll see what happens. I really wish they would stream it pay-per-view, because I think that money could be put towards a good cause. But unfortunately, nobody has thought that far ahead. So we will have to rely on the 17 tweet threads that we get on Wednesday at 3:15 p.m.
I just want to know if they cater it with one of those really long, like submarine sandwiches, if they turn it at the end to make it look like a hockey stick.
You'd have to turn the bread before it baked, wouldn't you?
Probably. But that's the thing that's really on my mind is, can you turn bread into a hockey stick? Which is my way of saying, I feel like I've reached a point with this stuff where I'm so exhausted by it. And I care so much about this stuff, but I'm so overwhelmingly exhausted by the divide, how people perceive the divide. Like on the trade deadline show, today was the NHL's trade deadline, and they were quote unquote drafting players for the new women's league in the same event where they had Angela James stop by wearing a Toronto Six like hoodie. It's like, you know, it sure would be nice if all the parties involved treated each other with a little more respect. And until that happens, nothing's ever going to get done. And I'm not here to single anyone out. I just think a lot of what's happened is super disappointing. And I also, even with all that going on, I'm like, well, this all is just a big sucky shitty situation. I think of how much the game has grown in spite of it all. I'm like, how amazing is that? No one talks about that aspect of it, is all this shit that's happened that's good for the PHF and for the PWHPA, like all the strides they've taken, while everyone is just like, how many sponsors are like, oh, so if I do this for the PWHPA, then everyone's going to think I only support the national team players and half the people are going to hate me, or vice versa. Even with all those factors involved, everything's still pointed in a good direction. And I think that to me is why I don't lose hope. But, you know, I don't expect anything to come out of this, frankly.
I just want the players to get what they want. And I don't think the players all want the same thing. And
that's hard. But
I just hope whatever happens, they are heard and they are able to make decisions that empower them. And ultimately, other than having good logos, I think those are the two things that I've got to let go of everything else. I think we all just have to, I don't know. I am between jobs, so if I need to drink on Wednesday, I will be doing it. That's all I'm going
to
say.
It's hard. I will say this. It's hard for the players to have a real voice in that room when they don't have a head of the Players Association. And it's hard for us to get a gauge of how things are done in good faith here. Like Eleni said, this was not supposed to be public information. It got leaked. It got leaked by somebody, and somebody leaked it with the intent of causing disruption potentially. And that in and of itself is like, okay, so this meeting is not being held in good faith by all the parties. So what are we doing? Like, what's the point here? And like, my joke was Gary Bettman saying, all right, girls, play nice. But that's the perception, right? That's the NHL will solve this big, messy thing called women's hockey. And I don't think the NHL is in the position, or frankly, do I want them to, beyond them showing up with a checkbook and just saying, what is it going to take to make this work? And then to put people, specifically women and people who know the women's game, essentially just not the same old white dudes that run that run the NHL, people who know the women's game in charge, and sign them a check and build something substantial like we saw built with the WNBA. Like, until we're ready for that discussion, I'm not ready for the NHL to be involved. But it's not my say. I write about it. I don't root either way. But that's my thoughts.
We've talked about a lot of different things tonight, so I'm going to keep this really, really short and blunt and to the point. Like, I echo a lot of what both of you said, maybe more so a little bit more what Mike was saying, especially the part where he did the very loud sigh. that hit me in my soul. I'm so tired. And honestly, at this point, like, let me know when something substantial happens. Until then, I don't want to know about meetings. I don't care. I want the players to get paid. I tell them this all the time. Like, I do whatever I can to help amplify their message, to enhance their reputation, enhance their status or whatever. And I'm happy doing that. And I just want everybody to get the money that they deserve. How it all ends up, I don't know. I don't have the answer. I'm not even going to sit here and try and explain or figure it out. Just let me know when something substantial happens, or we have to start talking about a different name other than the PHF or the NWHL. If we're going to get another acronym thing, then let's get it out really early in the summer, so we could have like a whole off season to prepare for this and deal with it and change again.
But please think of the writers.
Yeah, please think of us.
We're having such a time with all the acronyms, and they keep changing.
With that being said, I want to do a little bit of a. I'm blown away by like how many people have listened to us, and I've had a couple of players even tell me like, "Thank you," and you know, I listened to it on our bus ride or our plane ride or something like that, and I was like, "Wow, like why are you listening to us?" Like. It's nice to get a different point of view than what, you know, because they're in the room all the time and you know, and they have the way they see things, whether it's in their room or in other places around the league. So that being said, I got a friend of mine to sign this picture here that I guess our listeners won't be able to see, but you guys can see. This is a picture of Mariah Fujimugari after her first shutout. And she signed the picture down at the bottom. So we'll figure out a way to give this away to our listeners. And
awesome.
Our listeners. And I told Fuji about it, and she was so stoked and more than happy to sign it. And like I said, the nicest person in the world. She waited for me like 5 minutes while I finished interviewing Coach Jocelyn on Saturday. And I thought she was waiting with somebody, and then like the car pulled away, and I was like, "Oh, you weren't with that car?" Like, she's like, "No, I'm just standing out here holding my catching glove across the street from the parking lot, waiting to leave." So that was really nice, and we got to catch up, and she signed that picture for us. So we'll do a little bit maybe with the mailbag episode. Maybe we'll do a little bit of a giveaway with that.
That's awesome. Should point out is the resident stats dork. In her last four starts, Fuji allowed 2 goals combined. pretty good season for Fuji. So stick taps
it's because she's partially awesome. Greek. That's why.
There you go. It's the partial just Greekness.
So just taking a second. This past weekend, CTV News, which is a current affairs and documentary program that runs out of Canada, ran a program about Tori Sullivan, who plays with the Pride, and an experience that she had at BC. I think it's really important viewing if you can find a way to watch it. It's on YouTube. Just want to make sure everybody knows there's going to be a lot of content that may be triggering for people with respect to sexual assault and depression and stuff like that. But I think it's a really important watch, and I just want to take a moment and thank Tori for her bravery and, you know, telling her story. I know it wasn't easy to do, and just to be really clear that we stand with her, and we're all very proud of her, and we always today and always believe survivors.
Always.
Always. And, you know, I watched that and I was angry. I was sad. And my heart goes out to her and everything that she's been through. Talk about real bravery, having to bring that stuff up again and talk about it in such a public manner. I echo everything Elaney said. And
so I think we covered it all. It's hard to believe the season's over. Even harder to believe that the playoffs start Friday. Remember that, folks. Not Saturday start, like normal. Friday. So we're now in this mad dash. We know our matchups. We hope you enjoyed our player interviews to give you some extra perspective on what teams are expecting and what they have to get ready for heading into this. So here we come, Tampa Bay. Thanks for listening, everybody.